So this is the section of the class about the 1945 and the new government in 1945. And something really very surprising happened, really, and in both France and in Britain, we have particular names for this. In France, you talk about les Trente Glorieuses. Vous en avez entendu parler, les Trente Glorieuses. Ça c'est intéressant, parce que c'est fini en 75, il y a 40 ans, et on en parle encore quand même. Yeah? So it was obviously something very remarkable, the 30 glorious years, as you say in French. And in English, we talk about the post-war boom. We don't say the 30 glorious years, okay? You cannot say this in English, nobody will know what you're talking about. The post-war boom. That is to say, the biggest and longest economic boom in the history of capitalism. Okay, it was an exceptional, enormous. There are a couple of important things about this, because of course now we are looking back on it. So yeah, les Trente Glorieuses, ça commence en 45, ça finit en 75 à peu près. But you must remember, of course, that people who lived through that, they didn't know. So it's not the case, at the end of the Second World War, people did not say, ah, génial, maintenant il y a les Trente Glorieuses. So and similarly, in 1974, people didn't say, oh, we've had 29 years of the post-war bomb, there's only one year left, we better do something. Yeah? Of course, this is something that we find out later. So the first thing about the post-war boom is that nobody was expecting it. Everybody was saying, remember the 1930s? Mass unemployment, hyperinflation. No, that's in the end of the 1920s. Hyperinflation in Germany. A million ruined shopkeepers in Germany, which is one of the bases of Nazism, yeah? People on the streets, tremendous poverty in every across the world, not in one country. Yeah, in France, in Britain, in Germany, in Chile, in South America. North America, terrible suffering, and people imagined, well, that will start again after the war. What's more, critics of capitalism, the Marxists, said it is impossible for capitalism to expand anymore. Yeah? The crisis cannot be solved unless we get rid of capitalism. And these were not little Marxists, important Marxists like Leon Trotsky said it is impossible for there to be a new boom. No, he was killed in 1940, and it turned out that on this particular question, he was completely wrong. And there was this tremendous boom, but also you have these tremendous reforms. I just explained that Britain's economic situation was very, very bad, and yet. Whereas in 1926, 1929, 1930, 1935, the elite had refused to spend money to help the unemployed and to help the people, in 1945, they agreed. So the first question is why. In fact, I often repeat myself. I often say that when you're looking at history, the only interesting question is why, because otherwise it's like a phone book. It's a list of things that happened. Who cares? So why? Well, there's no simple answer, of course. Certainly, one element is the involvement of the people. People were determined. People, when they bought 600,000 copies of a parliamentary report, we really want things to change. Secondly, during the war in Britain and in France, for example, the left were very much involved in winning the war. The trade unions were involved in winning the war in Britain, organizing production. The Labour Party had ministers in the war cabinets. In France, of course, the Communist Party was at the center of the resistance. And so it was no longer possible to say, oh, well, these people who want a welfare state, they're just marginalized idiots. That was no longer possible. But also, I think, this is my theory, sections of the elites were looking back at the First World War. What happened after the First World War? The Russian Revolution, 2 years of strikes in Italy, revolution in Hungary, I think, revolution in Germany, strikes and mutinies in Britain, enormous strikes and mutinies in Britain. Even the police were on strike. And so there was very much an atmosphere. It's a good time to reform things if we don't want this to happen again. And in fact, one I think it's a conservative leader, or not one of the conservative leaders, who said, if you do not give the people reform, they will give you revolution. Now, this was not necessarily true. Yeah? There wasn't a revolutionary situation in Britain in 1945. But some sections of the elite thought it was true. And what people think is true is sometimes even more important than what is actually true. So that's some of the why. So let's go through some of the elements. Because if you want to decide why these big reforms happened in 1945. And these are absolutely enormous reforms. I think that it's very... I'm going to try to put some flesh on the idea of the welfare state. On dit en français, l'état-providence. Mais souvent, le lance comme une phrase sans se rendre compte que c'est le plus grand changement dans la vie des gens ordinaires depuis 500 ans. It's absolutely enormous. It was absolutely enormous. And in fact, although, again, it's a very boring expression, les trente glorieuses, it really is justified. It's really justified, yeah. That is to say, if you go to London in the 1920s, children don't have shoes. Yeah. You don't buy shoes for children because they grow too quickly. And in the 1950s, children had shoes. That's a big difference, especially if you have children. It's very bad for children not to have shoes, certainly. It's bad for their feet, you know. If you look at photographs of classes of school children in the 1930s and in the 1960s, in a class of 30 school children in the 1930s, you have several who are disabled one way or the other, not because they had an accident, but just because there was no medical care and nobody cared, yeah? And so, you know, polio, etc., all sorts of different things. It's very visible, very visible. The other thing is the teeth. If you look at the teeth, now, my generation does not have as good teeth as your generation, but if you look back a bit at the photographs, you know, teeth, because, you know, a dentist was a luxury. So just to give you like some sort of idea of the importance of the change. But if we want to understand the change, we also do have to look at the political forces. And as you know, in Britain, the political system is rather unusual because for 100 years, you had Labour, Conservative. You just had two parties. Contrary to the situation in France, where, you know, you have the UMP, et puis c'est la PR, et puis, yeah, or in Italy, where you appear to have a new party every 3 weeks, and so a very stable British system, and the Labour Party will come to office in 1945 and will make a lot of changes. And one of the things we need to look at then is the background of the Labour Party, 1931 to 1945. So 1931 was the worst moment of the year, of the century, for the Labour Party. They had, for the first time in 1929, for the first time, the Labour Party had a majority government. Ramsay MacDonald, the working class hero, was Prime Minister. And people were convinced that that society would change tremendously. There was more hope than for Syriza in Greece today. Only 2 years later, in the economic crisis, the leader of the Labour Party and the Prime Minister was expelled from the Labour Party because he had formed a government with a majority of Conservative ministers. So 1929 was the moment when all the millions of people who supported Labour said, now is the time, at last we have... The government, society is going to change. And only 2 years later, their hero, their prime minister, had joined the Conservatives to form a government. It was absolutely just demoralisation. Massive demoralisation in the Labour Party. And over the next 14 years, inside the Labour Party, there were tremendous debates on what went wrong and what do we need to do now. And this is one of the important... aspects of political parties, especially in Britain, you need to remember that political parties do not only exist when they win elections, of course, like Margaret Thatcher won and then Tony Blair won, but the political parties continue when they lost elections. They prepare, how are they going to win next time? And if they do win, what are they going to do? And so inside the Labour Party, there was a whole series of tremendous debates. Because the 1929 to 1931 government had showed that the ideas of the Labour Party in the midst of an economic crisis were not enough to make the to stabilise the Labour government. Among the influential people in the Labour Party after 1931, there were three different reactions. What can we do? Our government was a disaster, so what should we do? One reaction: let's leave the Labour Party and move to the right. Ramsay MacDonald formed a government with Conservative ministers. And Mosley formed a fascist party instead. And so there's the two people who were in the Labour Party who moved to the right and did something completely different after the disaster. Mosley formed first of all the New Party, and then made it in 1932, made it the British Union of Fascists, and campaigned during the 30s against Jews in Britain. That was the first reaction. Let's abandon Labour and move to the right. The second possibility was followed by the Webbs. That's I can't remember the man's name, but it's a man and his wife, both called Webb, and Mr. Strachey, and they moved over to join they became communists and supported the Russian government. So, for example, John Strachey became a communist in 1931. So he looked at the Labour government and said, well, I was in the Labour Party, we had a government, it wasn't successful, I'm going to become a communist. And he wrote a book in 1932, The Coming Struggle for Power, La Lutte pour le Pouvoir qui arrive, and he became a communist. The two Webbs went to Russia in 1932, and they wrote a book, Soviet Communism, A New Civilization, which was a very, very positive account of Stalinist Russia, and so that was their reaction to the experience of the Labour government not succeeding, led people to leave the Labour Party to the left or to the right. But inside the Labour Party, there were a series of activists and intellectuals who wanted to try to change the Labour Party policy. They say, okay. We saw what the Labour Party did last time. It was not good enough. So let's think of something new. And they established three unofficial bodies. The Socialist League, the XYZ Club, and the New Fabian Research Bureau. So these are three different organisations inside the Labour Party, three different ones, studying what should the Labour government do next time. Yeah, how can we win, and what can we do if we win? So these are important, and I think it is important to go into these details because ideas make a real difference. I know that today it's quite fashionable to imagine that most politicians are corrupt or only interested in themselves. I don't think that's generally true. Yeah? The politicians, they may be right or wrong, but they're not normally just trying to make money. There are much easier ways of making money than being a politician, definitely. So here you have three organisations. Now, I want you to look at the names, because the name of an organisation is never an accident. Yeah? Which one of these organisations wanted a lot of people to join? Some of these organisations were small organisations which weren't really recruiting, and one of these organisations was very active trying to get new people, join us. Which one? From the name. Yeah, the Socialist League. Can you imagine, you're giving out a leaflet? Join the XYZ Club. What? Join the New Fabian Research Bureau. Le Bureau de Recherche des Nouveaux Fabiens. Fabien, c'est quoi Fabien? Very, very important, the names. The Socialist League was an activist organisation. We want workers, we want trade unions, we want Christians, we want everybody in here. And we want to have meetings in every town to discuss. It's an activist organisation. And it lasts for 5 years. And the most important gentleman in here is Stafford Cripps. You can check him out on Wikipedia. Wikipedia is very useful for people who are not too famous. Yeah. If you look at Wikipedia on Winston Churchill or on Charles de Gaulle, you get a lot of opinion which might be okay, might not be okay. But if you get people who are not very famous, like Stafford Cripps, the person who wrote that, nobody cares enough about Stafford Cripps to tell lies about him. And so that's very, very important. Yeah, if you get sort of secondary figures, you get very good information. It's like rock groups. You get very good information on Wikipedia from them. Okay, Stafford Cripps. The second one, the XYZ Club. Now look at the name, Club. We don't really want people to join us. We just want to discuss. And their idea was, the Socialist League's idea was that the Labour Party failed because it was not left-wing enough. The Socialist League said what we needed was more trade unions, more strikes, more activity to support the government. The XYZ Club, as its name suggests, the reason that Labour failed is we didn't have enough experts. We needed better experts. Us, for example. So that the idea was, so it's very, very different. The Socialist League is a sort of class struggle idea where the problem was we didn't mobilise the workers enough. XYZ Club said, no, the problem was we didn't have enough experts. And the most important gentleman in there was no doubt Hugh Gaitskill. Now I give you the name. I just give you one name of a leading figure because you can't remember 100 names. But it is very important to remember that in political organisations, they don't depend too much on the leader. It's not one person. It's always a lot of people involved. And finally, the new Fabian Research Bureau. Now Research Bureau. So you can see that in the opinion of the new Fabian Research Bureau, the problem of the Labour government is that they didn't have enough people doing research. Yeah? Which is not a stupid idea. You know, if you want to be the government, you need to make sure you understand the world economy and trade unions and defence. And you know, it's a lot of stuff to understand. It's not completely idiotic. But it can be seen as a slightly elitist sort of approach. And they said very much in their constitution, the new Fabian Research Bureau will not aim at a large membership. We will not set up local branches or engage in propaganda. We will bring together bright young men and sympathetic experts to conduct serious, high-powered, up-to-date research on the problems confronting the present or any future Labour government. So they went into considerable detail about what the Labour Party should do. And in particular, in 1937, they published a very important document, a pamphlet, called Labour's Immediate Programme. If anybody is interested in the situation today in Greece, it's probably interesting to read what they said in 1937 in Labour's immediate criticism. So what did they include in this programme? This is important because in 1945 the Labour Party will use a lot of this programme. Nationalisation of the Bank of England, nationalisation of the railways, nationalisation of coal, electricity and gas. So nationalisation was a central part of the proposals of the new Fabian Research Bureau. Let me just say something about its name, because names are always tremendously important, whether you're talking about rock groups or political organisations. The new Fabian Research Party, this is named after Fabian, who was a military general in ancient Rome. And he was famous because he always tried to avoid directly attacking the enemy, and he always tried to find some intelligent tactic to attack from behind. So you can see that the New Fabian Research Bureau is an organisation that thought that labour needs very intelligent tactics. So these are different explanations. Why did the Labour government of 1929 to 31, the first majority Labour government which we had such great hopes in, why did it fail, the Socialist League? Because we didn't organise the workers, we didn't listen enough to the workers, we didn't organise enough strikes, there was not enough mass involvement, the XYZ Club. There were not enough experts, we need to form new experts. The New Fabian Research Bureau, we need more research so as to have more intelligent tactics. So three reactions, and probably the last one is the most influential. So just a couple of words on the 1945 elections, because they were kind of surprising. You had Winston Churchill on the one side saying, well, I won the war, so vote for me. Yeah. Which was quite a strong argument, you know. People, he was pretty good, he was pretty talented at winning the war. He lost the election. So how can you explain this? The national war hero, who was so popular that even my mother has a bust of Winston Churchill on the television. Although my mother is the most conservative lady in the history of humanity. No, probably not, actually. She has made progress. But there was Yevhen Lamouche, as you say. Okay, so how could he lose the election after being such a hero? Well, there were a number of reasons. First of all, people remembered, not such long ago, the government of 1931, 1933, 1935, 1937. The conservative government of the 1930s, which was the most horrible time of mass unemployment, mass poverty. They said, you know, anything, we don't want to go back to the 1930s. And secondly, people saw that the Labour Party said, we are going to apply the Beveridge Report. The Beveridge Report, social protection from the cradle to the grave, we will apply this. When you're unemployed, you will get some money to survive. I think the argument about medical care, and this is the key expression, free at the point of use. Medical care will be free at the point of use. That is to say that when you go to the doctor, you don't need your checkbook. You leave it at home because it's free. And this is something tremendously dear to British people. When I go to, I've now been in France for 25 years, so it's okay. But for the first 10 years, when I went to the doctor with a checkbook, I felt dirty. Yeah? It'd be like writing a check to a policeman, you know. Oh, the policemen, you're not supposed to write checks to policemen, they're supposed to be public servants here. It's very, very ingrained, yeah. So free at the point of view. Now, tremendously important, because before that, I mean, certainly my grandparents in the 1920s, 1930s, if the children were ill, they called a doctor. But if the adults were ill, you didn't call a doctor. It's just too expensive, much too expensive. Yeah, and so you would find the money for your children because children are children. Yeah, so the idea that the doctors can be free was just an incredible dream. Yeah, it was an incredible dream. Also, it has to be said that Winston Churchill openly said a national health service would be a terrible thing. Yeah, Winston Churchill was openly against it. In fact, he said, nationalisation and government control of health service is the beginning of fascism. Because he was an old-fashioned conservative. Yeah, private is perfect. Oh.